we need support all over the world because we are facing a government debt. It is, I don't know how to describe our Chinese government.
Hong Kong protesters asked for more help from the United States. It's Thursday, October 17th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Also coming your way, we'll talk with a former trade official about the status of U.S.-China trade talks. Kim Jong-un apparently sends a message by riding a white stallion. And the conflict between Myanmar's armed ethnic groups and the government forces is escalating. All on VOA Asia. Jeers from opposition lawmakers forced embattled Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam to cut short a live reading of her annual policy speech Wednesday. She instead delivered a pre-recorded version and in it maintained a firm stance against anti-Beijing protesters that have rocked the city for four consecutive months. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Hong Kong with reporting from Brian Padden.
This was Chief Executive Carrie Lam's opportunity to soothe Hong Kong's frayed nerves after 4 months of anti-government protests. She didn't get the chance. Opposition lawmakers shouted down the city's chief executive just a few sentences into her annual policy speech, leading her to abandon the live event and issue a pre-recorded address instead.
I'll adjourn the meeting.
In her wide-ranging speech, she made one thing clear. Acts that advocate Hong Kong's independence, she said, will not be tolerated.
5 demands!
Not one less!
5 demands!
Not one less!
Fight for freedom!
Protesters' convictions are similarly firm. For 4 months, they've taken to the streets to protest what they say is Beijing's tightening grip on this Asian economic hub. They have 5 demands, including universal suffrage, an investigation of police violence, amnesties for protesters, and the full official withdrawal of the spark that lit this protest at the beginning of this year, a now-withdrawn extradition bill that would allow mainland China to try people arrested in Hong Kong. Lam protesters say is part of the problem. Activist Lung Kwok Hung says Lam has one good option at this time.
She needs to resign because since she keep on broken her promises, her support rate is under 25%.
Instead, protesters are looking beyond the city for help. On Tuesday, the U.S. House of Representatives unanimously passed an act that allows the United States to put greater pressure on officials who are seen to threaten Hong Kong's autonomy. That vote was largely celebrated in Hong Kong, with thousands of people flooding a small square to show support. On Wednesday, this 47-year-old Hong Kong resident, who gave his name as Fat, said he's grateful for U.S. support.
Thank you, all Americans, for the help for Hong Kong, to support Hong Kong people. Yeah, we are happy to see that, and we need support all over the world because we are facing a government debt. It is. I don't know how to describe our Chinese government.
Pro-Beijing lawmakers disagree. Starry Lee is chairman of the Pro-China Democratic Alliance for the Betterment and Progress of Hong Kong. This is foreign intervention, she says. We also urge the U.S. government to stop interfering in Hong Kong affairs. In her speech, Lam also voiced concern about the ongoing protests that, she said, caused injuries to more than 1,100 people and the arrests of more than 2,200 people. She also condemned activists who committed violent acts, including attacking police with bricks and gasoline bombs and vandalizing subway stations and businesses deemed to be pro-Beijing. Hong Kong has long been the jewel of Asia for its rich cultural life and commercial opportunities. The protests have changed that, with unrest and clashes between police and protesters marring the city's image, and protesters asking ever tougher questions of the increasingly embattled leadership. Add to that a question Lam asked in her speech that is on the minds of everyone here, heard from the streets to the protesters' colorful Lenin walls. Will Hong Kong return to normal? She asked. Is Hong Kong still a place we can live in peace? Anita Powell, VOA News, Hong Kong.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Law enforcement officials Wednesday announced the takedown of the largest child pornography site on the dark web, unsealing criminal charges against its South Korean operator and hundreds of users around the world. Extensive cleanup efforts continued in the neighborhood of Yanagawa in Fukushima, the prefecture in Japan hardest hit by Typhoon Hagibis. Rescue workers searched for missing people as the death toll rose to 74. From sea cucumbers to cancer research, Vietnam and Australia will start collaborating on science initiatives that are meant to show how innovation can be used to spread out the benefits of economic growth evenly to more of the population. This is VOA Asia. A truce in the U.S.-Chinese tariff war and Beijing's promises to open more of its state-dominated economy are raising investor hopes, but Beijing is trying to temper expectations while companies express frustration over the halting pace of market opening. The China Daily, an English-language newspaper aimed at foreign readers, warned Tuesday that the two sides have yet to put last week's agreement on paper after President Donald Trump suspended a planned tariff hike. In exchange, Trump said Beijing would buy up to $50 billion of American farm goods, a pledge China was yet to confirm, but President Trump says has already begun. We welcome to VOA Asia Jeff Moon. He is the former assistant U.S. trade representative for China and now the president of China Moon Strategies, LLC. Jeff, after last week's meeting here in Washington, what is the status as you see it between the United States and China as far as trade talks are concerned?
Well, the announcement after the trade talks was made live in the Oval Office. There was nothing in writing. So all we have really is what the president said. The president said that basically there are three categories of commitments here. Things that are either underway or have already been done. Things that are merely agreements in principle. And then there are certain things that are off the table and are not a part of this agreement. The only concrete things that have actually been done or are going to be done are the U.S. has postponed tariffs that were supposed to go into effect on October the 15th. That was last Tuesday. And China has committed to buy agricultural products. The president said in the range of $40 to $50 billion. But there has been a lot of press speculation since then that the Chinese may not have the capacity to do that and that they may key their willingness to do that to the president's subsequent willingness to also postpone tariffs that he has threatened for December the 15th on consumer goods coming into the United States.
How much of this is posturing on the part of the United States and also on the part of Beijing?
Well, I think this is a lot of posturing. I mean, frankly, Trump has taken a reality TV approach to the negotiations by announcing the deal live on TV with him in the Oval Office. And, you know, the suspense is waiting for the next televised event, which will be at the APEC summit in the middle of November. I think on the Chinese side, they are also posturing. They initially would not even recognize that there was a deal. I think perhaps because they did not want to indicate to their public that the Chinese side was making any kinds of concessions. But they probably reversed course and within the past day or so recognized there was a deal because the U.S. press reaction was so negative to the lack of specificity in the deal. They were saying there was no deal. Trump was saying there was a deal. They realized they needed to preserve Trump's credibility back here in the United States in order to keep the negotiations in track. So there's the real answer here is there's lots of posturing and very little substance that we can nail down.
There has been speculation that the Chinese would prefer to see Donald Trump stay in office for another 4 years than to get a Democrat. Do you hear the same type of thing?
I don't know. I hear it both ways. On the one hand, there are reports that they are frustrated with Trump because he is so erratic in his negotiating style. It's very frustrating to ever pin him down. But on the other hand, I think that the Democrats would be tougher and bring tougher terms, and the Chinese would have to deal with that.
So how do they go about in any way influencing the election if indeed they are doing that or planning to do that?
I think that in terms of the election, the Chinese want to stay out of this. Hunter Biden came up as a discussion topic within the past week or two, and the Chinese have simply not responded. They realize, I think they're sophisticated enough to realize that getting China involved in U.S. domestic politics is both counterproductive to the overall relationship, and it can do nothing to push forward the impetus toward a trade deal, and it could probably hinder it and derail it. So I think the Chinese don't want to get involved. And I think, frankly, after the election gets in full sway, say in early February when we get to the Iowa caucuses, that the political environment in the U.S. is going to be too hot to do a deal anyway, from both sides' perspectives.
Jeff, has the Hong Kong protest played any part in these trade talks?
Not directly, but I think that both Trump and Xi are politically at probably the weakest points of their tenures. And Hong Kong comes into play because Hong Kong is directly threatening Beijing's rule over China. And that is a threat to the Chinese leadership. Trump, of course, has his own problems with impeachment. And that's why it's occurred to me that one reason for them to reach some kind of a deal now and or later is to create some good news and to divert attention from all that.
Jeff Moon, former assistant U.S. trade representative for China, currently the president of China Moon Strategies, LLC. He joined us on Skype. Happening now in Asia, Vietnam is pulled abominable from theaters because the U.S. Chinese-made animated movie showed a map supporting Chinese claims to the disputed South China Sea. The image in one scene showed the so-called Nine Dash Line, a vague and broken outline around the resource-rich waters China claims as its own territory. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. North Korean state media has released photos of leader Kim Jong-un scaling the country's highest mountain on horseback and suggested the display means he is considering a great operation. Reuters' Francis McGuire has more.
In what North Korea called a defiant message, new state media photos show Kim Jong-un riding alone up a sacred mountain astride a white horse. These epic images ran alongside a gushing state media report that cited Kim aides saying they're convinced Kim is planning a, quote, great operation. Analysts say his latest ride up the mountain could symbolize Kim standing up to pressure over the North's nuclear program. Kim has said he's only giving the United States until year's end to loosen its stance on the North shedding its nuclear weapons. If not, he says Pyongyang will pursue a new path forward.
That is Reuters' Francis McGuire. The conflict between Myanmar's armed ethnic groups and government forces is escalating. New recruits are joining groups such as the Arakan Army, which has set up training camps in Kachin State, home to fellow Northern Alliance member, the Kachin Independence Army. Steve Sanford traveled to the region and filed this report for VOA.
Increased fighting between government forces and an ethnic armed alliance has created an upsurge of new recruits in the ethnic regions. The Kachin Independence Army, which already controls a designated zone within the state, is providing a base camp for the Arakan Army that formed 10 years ago.
The reason I joined the Arakan Army and train as a female soldier is because I don't want to see the Myanmar Army oppress and kill the Rakhine people anymore. The Myanmar Army bullies and treats us badly in every way they can. I can't take it, so I made a decision to serve my nationality and army.
Arakan Army Deputy Commander Dr. Neil Tun Ung, who also oversees the medic training, says the Rohingya Muslims are not the only group being attacked in Rakhine State.
When there was a problem with Bengali in Rakhine State, the world paid attention and sympathized with them. We want to beg the world, please look at what's happened to Arakan people. Feel for us, too. We're also in the same situation like the Bengali.
Despite being predominantly Buddhist followers, Arakan civilians have still been a target of the Central Burmese Army. Key economic zones under development in Rakhine State funded by China and India have already led to the displacement of thousands of civilians along the coastline. While the pipelines and deep sea ports will provide oil and gas to neighboring countries, benefits for the local population remain unclear, according to Arakan Army rebels.
One day I stand on top of the mountain. I look down to the capital and I see their lights all over the city. But when I look back to our village, I hope to see the lights. But what I see is only the darkness. That makes me very sad.
Counter-terrorism charges filed by Myanmar police against four Arakan Army leaders linked to police outpost attacks remain outstanding as ceasefire talks continue with other members of the alliance. Steve Sanford for VOA News.
Coming up, a lot of interest in expanding China rail projects. This is VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Pakistani and Indian troops exchanged gunfire in the disputed Himalayan region of Kashmir, killing 4 civilians and wounding nearly a dozen others, say officials from both sides, as tensions remain high between the two South Asian countries. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As we continue, China plans to build railways and roads that will cut across the Himalayan mountains into Nepal. They're being closely watched. The ambitious projects could draw Beijing deeper into the South Asian region, increasing its strategic influence close to Indian borders. While India is wary about the development that China is promising Nepal under its Belt and Road Initiative, opinion is divided in the tiny country, wedged between the Asian giants, on whether it will bring a boon or drive it into debt. The highlight of the 20-point agreement signed during a landmark visit by Chinese President Xi Jinping to Nepal last week was a Himalayan corridor, a feasibility study for a transboundary railway that will run from Tibet to Kathmandu and eventually to Lumbini, a town close to the Indian border, along with a tunnel road to be built through the Himalayas to connect Kathmandu to Kurung, a town near the Chinese border. Landlocked Nepal, long a buffer between China and India, relies for its trade and transit routes through India on its south. But as the country looks increasingly to Beijing for investment amid a dramatic upswing in ties, China has pledged connectivity projects that will provide alternative routes and reduce its dependency on India. Some say that the connectivity projects will be a boon for Nepal, linking it to the huge Chinese economy, enabling swift movement between the two countries and turning the tiny nation into a transit hub for trade between China and India, the region's two big economies. China's international building projects range far and wide. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has officially opened the second phase of his flagship infrastructure project, a Chinese-funded and built railway that will eventually link the port of Mombasa to Uganda. This latest stretch of track cost $1.5 billion and runs from Nairobi to the Rift Valley town of Naivasha, but critics say the cost of the railway is plunging Kenya into debt. Ruud Elmendorp reports from Nairobi and Naivasha.
Waving the Kenyan flag, President Uhuru Kenyatta Wednesday inaugurated the second phase of the country's new railway. The president then joined the first ride and listened to the onboard announcements.
Good afternoon, Your Excellency the President.
The new track is 120 kilometers long and has 12 stations. Passengers can ride the trains, but the railway is mainly for cargo. The track will eventually lead to an inland container depot, from where containers will be distributed to Uganda and Rwanda and to South Sudan. The train stopped at every station, where a cheering crowd awaited the president. He promised them that the new railway will bring prosperity. He says that if the railway comes here, development also comes here. The cost of $1.5 billion for construction of the second phase comes up on top of the $3.2 billion spent for the first stretch from Mombasa to Nairobi. President Kenyatta says this money will be earned back by the economic development spurred on by the railway.
The completion of the Nairobi to Suswa section of the SGR project is expected to revolutionize the development of the surrounding areas.
The loans are with Chinese banks. Wu Peng is a Chinese ambassador to Kenya. He says in return China is not only lending, but also investing in Kenya with the coming of the railway.
We encourage Chinese enterprises to invest in the Warsaw ICDs and the special economic zones.
The railway currently generates $75 million per year from passengers and cargo. At that pace, the loan will be paid back in 60 years. Kenya hopes to see revenues rise once the railway is connected to the neighboring countries. However, there's no timetable for construction of the third and final phase. Officials have yet to secure the financing. Ruth Elmendorp for VOA News, Naivasha, Kenya.
This news break from VOA Asia. The magnitude 6.4 earthquake struck the southern Philippines Wednesday, killing at least one child and injuring more than two dozen other people. The island of Mindanao is where the earthquake struck, opening cracks in buildings and homes, sending residents running from shops and offices and knocking out power. You're listening to VOA Asia. Creating human organs from a 3D printer may sound like science fiction. However, researchers are working on making that a reality. Engineers in one lab at Rice University are 3D printing complex vascular networks found in human tissue. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has details from Houston.
These bioengineers are trying to 3D print replacement tissues for humans made from their own cells.
We know that there are millions of people worldwide that could benefit from a ready supply of available organs that are biochemically matched to them.
The challenge is to create complex vascular structures that keep cells alive by getting nutrients and oxygen into the tissue and waste products out.
It's a very simple design.
Jordan Miller is part of a team that developed a 3D bioprinter. It uses a hydrogel material commonly used in research. The liquid material turns into a solid, soft gel when a blue light shines on it. Light-absorbing yellow food coloring is added, so only certain parts become solid, creating intricate vascular structures.
What it allows is for people to do this very rapid tissue printing with very complex architecture with live cells in a soft hydrogel material that you could grow them in.
This lung-mimicking air sac shows what the 3D printer can do. With oxygen and blood inside, it looks and breathes like the real thing. To test if cells can function and survive in 3D printed hydrogel tissue, researchers implanted them into mice with liver injuries. The liver cells survived the implantation. Additional studies will look at how such an implant impacts the health of the mice. Miller says this is just the beginning of the quest to make even more intricately complex structures of the human body that not only look but also function like the real thing. Miller is optimistic about the future of using this technology to build living human tissues for eventual implantation.
I do expect that within our lifetime we will have organ replacements for humans.
And perhaps even one day, doctors can print replacement organs with cells from the patient's body. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
This is Science in a Minute.
Piranhas are carnivorous fish that have razor-sharp teeth. They can be found in the Amazon River Basin area of South America and are well known for their feeding frenzies that churn the water so fiercely it appears to be boiling. Piranhas attack with such viciousness that they are able to strip all the flesh of an animal within a matter of minutes. Researchers led by the University of Washington has confirmed previous findings that piranhas always have a ready supply of those razor-sharp teeth. The researchers found that the fish have two sets of interlocking teeth, one for each side of their face. When one tooth is lost or becomes worn throughout their lives, all the teeth in the set are immediately replaced by another waiting just below the gum line. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes, the managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hayoung and Afra. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.